This is Jesse Cole, author of Fans First, Change the Game, Break the Rules, and Create an Unforgettable Experience. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named as one of the top marketing podcasts by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable on this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. This episode is sponsored by Marketing Architects, creators of the all-inclusive TV advertising concept that's so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. I'll tell you more and how to get a free copy of the book in a few minutes. Now, let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome back Jesse Cole, the Willy Wonka of baseball, to talk about his book, Fans First, Change the Game, Break the Rules, and Create an Unforgettable Experience, published by Lioncrest. Jesse Cole is a fanatic about fandom. In 2016, he founded Fans First Entertainment and launched the Savannah Bananas baseball team with one mission: to spark a fan-focused movement. Whether at the ballpark, on social media, on stage delivering keynotes in features for ESPN and Entrepreneur, or in his first book, Find Your Yellow Tux, featured on episode 369 of the Marketing Book Podcast, Jesse continues to create fans all over the world, including the host of the Marketing Book Podcast. Jesse is the proud inventor of Banana Ball and Dolce and Banana underwear, and not so proud promoter of the human horse race and flatulence fun night. He's a raving fan of his beautiful wife, Emily, his kids, and peerless promoters like Walt Disney, P.T. Barnum, and Bill Veeck. Jesse owns 7 yellow tuxedos. And interesting facts, as a baseball player, he pitched no-hitters, he hit 3 home runs, and he even got to pitch at Fenway Park, home of the Boston Red Sox. Jesse, congratulations on Fans First, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
I'm fired up to be back, and I'm impressed. I don't know where you found those baseball facts from way back in the day. I thought those were buried. Those were my few highlights I've ever had of playing baseball.
You're talking to somebody who read your book. It's at the very end, page 300-something. Oh, man, I was all over it. I'm so excited to have you back. But I am required to ask you one question. Right now, are you wearing a yellow tux?
What else would I be wearing?
Thank you. Okay. Yes. We're going to go with that. And actually, you're from Massachusetts originally, right? So pitching at Fenway was kind of a big deal, no?
Oh, geez. The Red Sox were everything. I mean, every day during the season, I had a Red Sox game on. It was all about the Red Sox growing up south of Boston.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So one other question from a lot of my listeners, they asked several, you know, like, is there a banana in your pocket? Just ignore that. But one of them is your favorite band Bananarama?
Ooh, that's a hard no, but I feel like I need to look into them.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure they'd, yeah, if you get them tickets, they'd probably love just to be able to come, because as I understand it, the games are sold out for season tickets, right?
It's wild. Now our wait list is over 20,000 for tickets. It's unbelievable.
Wow. Sounds like the Green Bay Packers or something.
I don't know what's happening down in Savannah, but the support has been unbelievable.
That's great. That's great. I'm not surprised. Now, I do have to say, hey, speaking of the Green Bay Packers, I have a client named Larry Lombardi. Yes, he is related to Vince Lombardi. But I gave him a copy of your Find Your Yellow Tux book, because at one time he was marketing director of the Outer Banks Daredevils, which used to be in your league.
Oh, wow. Yes, I remember that team way back in the day.
Yeah, he loved it. He loved it. So I don't think out of whatever, this will be, you know, almost 400 episodes, I don't think I've ever had a warning at the beginning of a book. So I feel compelled to share this and help set the stage for the listeners. You write, warning, this book might lead to gratuitous fun and the urge to go bananas. If you hate smiling, feeling good about yourself, feeling good about your fellow humans, banana puns, and generally having fun, then turn away now. This book is not for you. Also, you might be a Grinch. Better look into that. So, yep, perfect. Really set the tone. And I just wanted to read from another part from the intro, just to give folks, you know, your events, the games are basically a circus where a baseball game breaks out. And I thought that was a very important distinction that I got from your, you know, learning about you and reading your first book. And I wanted to read from the intro. You write, "Hi, I'm Jesse Cole. I'll be your MC for this book. Why does this book have an MC? Well, this is not your typical book, and I am not your typical author. There will be some detours and asides. There will be some surprises and extras. There will be dad jokes and bathroom humor and goofy characters. There will also be bananas, bunches and bunches of bananas. Through all these detours, stories, and banana puns, you will learn a completely new way of doing business, the fans' first way. We'll get to what that means a little bit later, but first, a little bit about me. I'm the Yellow Tux guy, author of Find Your Yellow Tux, speaker of keynotes, and owner of the world-famous Savannah Bananas baseball team. In case you couldn't guess from my nickname and the names of my first book, or the cover of this one, I do own several yellow tuxedos, 7 at the time this book was written. I may be the only repeat customer for brightcoloredtuxedos.com. I travel in my tux. I sleep in my tux. I speak in my tux. I even propose to my wife in front of a sold-out crowd in my tux. Because I believe in standing out, my tux has become both my calling card and my uniform. When I'm in uniform, it can only mean one thing. It's showtime. Time for me to have fun. Time for my team to have fun. Time for our fans to have the most fun of all. I've been fortunate to share the fans' first way on stages all over the world. Here in this book, I'm fortunate to share it with you, just you and me, together on this book adventure. Me and my tux, and you and your chaise lounge, your airplane seat, your hot tub, wherever you get your best reading in. Welcome to Banana Land. And the first question I have is that you write that when you first bought the team, things didn't go well because you weren't any different. You were acting like everyone else, and you were talking instead of showing. You were like advertising and marketing and selling by the normal rules. Jesse Cole, what happened and where did that lead?
Well, I think most people, you know, you think of normal as, hey, normal's good. You know, normal's comfortable. Normal's relaxed. And, you know, normal was what we tried to do to fit in. You know, we tried to come into Savannah and try to fit in like everyone else. We don't want to be the new kids on the block because, you know, Savannah's got such a historic nature to the city and, you know, people that have been there for so long that we wanted to try to fit in. And we got terrible results because of that. You know, we were the new kids and we were trying to act like everyone else and people treated us like everyone else. And that was the baseball team that failed. And so
the one that you replaced.
The one that we replaced. You know, there was professional baseball for 90 years in Savannah. And, you know, they were the lowest in the league in attendance. People weren't coming to the games. They wanted a $40 million stadium and the city said no, so they left. And so when I came into Savannah, I wasn't wearing the yellow tuxedo. I was just trying to act like this, you know, owner of a team and trying to be professional. And people are like, we've already seen that for 90 years. It doesn't work. And so, you know, I don't blame them. We only sold a handful of tickets. And by January of 2016, we got the call that we overdrafted our account and we were out of money. And that's when Emily and I had to sell our dream house and empty out our savings account. And we were living on just a few dollars a week to try to eat and make ends meet. And that's when really that belief hit me, whatever's normal, do the exact opposite. You have to go and be different and you have to dare to be different and not be afraid of what people will think.
Explain how constraints, believe it or not, foster creativity.
Oh, you know, this has proven itself over and over and over again. And I think, you know, obviously coming off COVID and the amount of constraints that every person, every family, every business had was huge. But what I've realized is that every time we get a constraint, for instance, whether it was COVID that we couldn't play, so we had to rethink and reimagine our broadcast and how we could broadcast games, or the fact that, you know, rain delays, you know, every single game in Savannah, you feel like we get rain and we have to reimagine how do we entertain fans. And If we lose our breakdancing coach, you know, we had to figure out how do we have a new character. If we lose our announcer, how do we come up with new ideas? And every single time we lose something, I dig in with our team and say, ooh, what does this now give us the opportunity to do? And Doug is more than anything, I think a mindset of how you view things is how you do things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you view constraints as debilitating and literally going to, you know, cripple you, then that's what it will do. But if you look at it and say, ooh, we got a constraint, what do we get to do now? You're going to be able to do something that you never even would have thought of doing in the beginning.
Yeah. I loved it. How you view things is how you do things. Carve that one in stone. If it's not already up at historic Grayson Stadium, it should be. So another big idea, I mean, you hit us with right between the eyes here, a little fastball. Explain what you mean when you write that attention beats marketing.
And again, I shared this briefly in the Yellow Tux book, as I learned this a lot from P.T. Barnum. But over the last 6 years of the bananas, we don't have a marketing plan. We don't sit together with our marketing. Everyone's like, "Oh, you guys are, you know, really good at marketing." You know, now we're up to, you know, creeping on 2 million TikTok followers, and right. It's wild to see the following that's happened lately. We have an attention plan. And so actually every Monday, we're on our world tour right now as we record this, and we every Monday we get together and we talk about OTTs. Those are the over-the-top moments that we're going to create. Whether we're going to have, we have a player that can do a split and come up to bat and do a banana split. He can literally go in the batter's box and have his legs all the way out and split. It's
I've
crazy.
I've seen that video. It's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. So that's an OT. That's an intention moment. Or whether we have, which will be happening this weekend, stilts. We taught him how to pitch a 10-foot pitcher on the mound in stilts. That's an OTT moment. Our umpire that we found off Ellen, he's a dancing umpire that can do more twerking and gyrations than I've ever seen or ever wanted to see in a grown man do while umpiring. But that him coming up with strikeout moves is an attention plan. And so every Monday we come up with that. And just to give you an example, in the world tour, in the first 4 weeks of the world tour, we've gained almost 1 million followers and had 150 million views on our videos. There was no marketing plan. It was, what are the things that we can do that create attention, that are things that never happened before in a baseball field? That's a different conversation. And for businesses, I think you can start having those conversations. What are we doing to create attention? Not what are we doing to market like everyone else?
One could argue you can't buy attention anymore. You have to earn it.
100%. I mean, yes. I mean, everyone is a media company now. And so there's so much noise out there. You don't buy attention. You have to do something that's worthy of attention. And that's where it gets the creative muscles going.
Yeah. There was a great quote from the creative director of the agency where I used to work, Craig Davis. And he was like, it was along the lines of, we can no longer interrupt what people are interested in. We must be what people are interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. Be the news.
Yeah, right. So, but let's talk just a second about something that might surprise people. And you say the best opportunity to do the unexpected and create a fan is when something goes wrong. Okay, listener, if you're driving, that was the podcast. There's not an accident near you. Just want to bring you behind the scenes of the Marketing Book Podcast for just a moment here. So I was interviewing Jesse Cole last week, and somehow we lost all internet connection. And so we're back. It's several days later, and we're going to continue this. But I just wanted to let you in on that so that if I start repeating myself, it's not because of, you know, concussions I sustained when I was younger from boxing matches. So, Jesse, back to the question I was just asking you, explain what you mean when you write that the best opportunity to do the unexpected and create a fan is when something goes wrong.
Just like this podcast.
Yeah.
So I think this is a perfect segue here. It's a great opportunity because of expectations. I think today, people, customers' expectations are the highest they've ever been because of services like Chick-fil-A and Amazon and Disney. And so when you have a high expectation for something and then all of a sudden something goes wrong, that's when you can really turn it around. And so, give an example. I referenced earlier about rain at a stadium. When it rains, our goal is for people to say it was the most fun I've ever had at a baseball game, and they never even threw a pitch. Because people are expecting a game, a beautiful night, and then you get all this rain. And that's why we have a 3-hour rain delay script of some of the best entertainment, things we've never done before. So we can hopefully wow fans. And then at the end, they can say, wow, I didn't expect that. I thought it would just be like a regular rain delay. They play music and then they send us home. And so we look at all those opportunities that if something happens wrong, how do we create even a better experience?
Right. And just to continue that thought, which is related to it, talk about the most powerful words in creating an unforgettable experience. It's three words, and the first one is you.
I'm very intrigued on where you're going with this.
Actually, that's not really a fair question. I'll edit that out. It's the you wouldn't believe. You wouldn't believe.
Oh, yes.
I realize
yes,
you didn't yes. write this. Hang on, let me start over. So related to that, talk about what you describe as the most powerful words, there's just three of them, in creating an unforgettable experience.
Well, since day one, we've wanted our fans to say, you wouldn't believe what happened at the stadium tonight. And you think about that, word of mouth is the most powerful form of marketing. They said, wow, it was a great time. I had an excellent time. But think about the times that you told someone, a friend, a family member, you wouldn't believe what happened today.
Yes.
You wouldn't believe. And when you tell them that, they're like, wait, they all get excited because it's something so dramatically over the top, bigger, different, that exceeds your expectations. That is the highest form of word of mouth marketing. So that's how we design our entire experience, from opening up the gates with having a full-fledged march and a full dance, to having the breakdancing base coach, to having the dancing umpire and the male cheerleading team, to having players deliver roses to little girls during the game and getting down to a knee, to having our players get autographs from kids on their jerseys or on their hats. It's those you wouldn't believe moments that I think really spread, and they're unbelievably contagious.
Well, I would also add they're very carefully engineered.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are just constantly, almost every day, I think you call it an idea palooza, where you analyze what happened afterwards, you think about things beforehand. I mean, you often hear the expression, there's no bad ideas, but you all really seem to have taken that to the next level in terms of your ideation.
Well, we've definitely proven that there's tons of bad ideas. we've come up with from the horse head race to the living pinata promotion to the banana cream pie promotion to all of these things, that the halftime shows, to all the things that haven't worked out. There's a lot of bad ideas, but that's how you learn.
Yes.
That's how you learn. You either succeed or you learn, or you either have a success or you have a story. And we develop a lot of stories here because things didn't go well. But that's part of our experimentation. So every night at our stadium, we do between 5 to 10 things that we've never done before in front of a live crowd. And half of them usually fail pretty miserably. But the other half work, and they can become hits at our stadium and keep our fans always asking what's next and to expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I found a whole lot of humility in the book because you were very upfront about the things that failed. And you talked about how you tried them. It was like, I think you had food trucks out there one night when it wasn't a baseball game, but that was just one example. And you said, you know, we tried it. We had a lot. You did a lot of things right, but then you realized, this is where we missed it. But you wouldn't have known that if you hadn't tried it. And that was the takeaway I had from a lot of the things that you all are trying. And we're going to talk a little bit more about experimentation in just a minute here. But I want to ask you, in your copious free time, I mean, you're married, you have two children, right? Two small kids?
We have three. We have one biological son and two foster kids.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. And
so three if I'm doing the math correctly.
Right.
These days.
So your wife, yes. Then she would argue there's four children at home if she were like
100%.
Mine. But in your copious free time, you somehow have the time to go off and give keynotes and talk to businesses and all that sort of things. And you mentioned in the book, I think it was on page 69, you talked to a lot of organizations who all want to know the same thing. They ask the same questions. They ask questions like, how can I grow? How can I sell more? How can I make more money? And why do you argue that that is actually the wrong conversation?
Yes, and it's tough. And it's tough because when you meet with companies, you know, they have the CEO, the president, the board of directors, whoever it may be, they're demanding growth, revenue, sales, increased profits. And I understand where these people are coming from. For us, that never has given us purpose, never has motivated us or inspired us. And so for us, it's very simple. The question we ask constantly is, how do we create more fans? And we ask the question, what is fans first? So it's very easy. People think we're crazy for what we charge. And the fact that, you know, our tickets are all inclusive in Savannah for $20 and includes all your burgers, hot dogs, chicken sandwiches, soda, water, popcorn, dessert all night long. And there's no ticket fees and there's no convenience fees and we pay your taxes and there's no parking fees. People think we're crazy. They think you need to be charging a lot more.
Okay, but the beer is extra, right?
Well, yeah, we can't give away free beer. That's okay. That's going against a few.
That was
of
the only thing. That was the first thing I was wondering about when I saw, you know, all inclusive. But please go ahead.
But our beer pricing is, you know, half the price of what they charge at other stadiums. And I think we leave thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table to create fans. And I think it's the difference between playing, you know, the short game, playing the long game. We are focused not on short-term profits, but long-term fans. Mm-hmm. And Douglas, I think one of the keys is so many people are focused on the next quarter. We're focused on the next quarter century. And so we're thinking about what happens in 25 years. And yes, could we have charged a little bit more? Could we have had extra fees and all that? But you may lose fans that way. And we want to have generations of fans. And you know what happens when you create fans? They take care of the revenue. They take care of the profits and everything. It sounds so simple, but it's not. I don't think many people have a conversation on a Monday morning and say, what can we do to create more fans this week?
Yeah, you talk about how when you've looked at business failures, you argue that the main reason is that instead of delighting their fans, they were chasing their customers.
Yeah.
TV advertising is a powerful channel for business growth, and it's a counterintuitive solution for businesses frustrated by the rising costs of digital marketing. But the traditional process for launching TV campaigns is expensive, time-consuming, and complex. That's why marketing architects flipped the traditional process on its head. With all-inclusive TV advertising, they invest their own money to produce, analyze, and optimize your TV campaign. All you pay for is media, setting you up for rapid growth at a significant cost advantage. This approach to TV is so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. It's called All-Inclusive TV, How Booming Brands Are Reimagining TV Advertising. It explores how a variety of brands are using TV to transform their businesses and how you can do the same. For a free copy of the book, visit this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com or visit marketingarchitects.com/book and tell them you heard about it on the Marketing Book Podcast. I guess it's a subtle distinction between a customer and a fan. Do you think that a lot of companies think that their customers are fans?
I think language really matters. And I learned this from Walt Disney. Obviously, he had cast members and guests, and everything that he utilized in his language was intentional. And I think if you talk about customers, you see them as someone that buys something from you. When you see someone as a fan, it's a different feeling. You know, I challenge everyone to think about what are either companies, musicians, artists, sports teams that they're fans of. And when you talk about it, you think about it, you get a different feeling. Oh, I mean, you get this excitement, you get giddy, you think of positive thoughts. And so I believe that marketing, in a traditional sense, can get customers. But I think it's creating these fans first moments that creates fans. And so, you know, I think it's a different conversation. Everyone's chasing customers, but if you have the conversation on how to create fans. And so that's how we build our whole strategy. Everything that we do from an entertainment strategy, it's, you know, how we have the 2 million TikTok followers. It's not about trying to get customers. It's about entertaining them to try to create fans.
Yeah, you're right. Long-term fans beat short-term profit. Long-term fans create long-term profit. And there was another line in the book that just stopped me in my tracks. It's so, I know it may seem really obvious to you or the listener, but for me, it's when you wrote, are your fans willing to wear your logo on a regular basis? Are they happy to wear your shirts when they don't have to? Are they proud to wear your logo in public? And I'm looking at you, all you companies that are offering promotional products to your customers with your logo on it. Do they really want to? Oh man, that for some reason that just really, really resonated with me.
Well, thank you. Well, what does it say about? You know, what is that logo say about you, say about that company? And you're right. We get at conferences, you get handed so many pens and koozies and everything with all these companies' logos, and we don't resonate with them. We're not a fan of them, so we don't want to wear that. And I think the biggest test is your own people. So does your employees, do your team members, staff, however you call it, whatever you call them, do they want to wear your logo out in public when they don't have to? Mm-hmm. And it's very easy for a sports team, but what about Yeti? I mean, Yeti is a cooler company, yet people are wearing their hats left and right because they believe in what Yeti stands for.
Great example. And if there are any listeners that would like a Marketing Book Podcast logo to put on your laptop, not only will people think you're smarter, but they will actually find you more attractive. We've tested this. It's very true.
I saw that study. Yeah, it's a good study.
Yeah, it's good. Peer-reviewed, clinical. Yeah. So let's go to one of the big themes in the book, and that's the fans first way. There's actually quite a bit of the book is about your paradigm here, your model, and then how you use that to make decisions down to the lowest level, particularly as it relates to dealing with a customer. And I'm just going to mention what they are quickly, and then I'm going to jump into two or three of them. It's eliminate friction, entertain always, experiment constantly, and the fourth is engage deeply, and five is empower action. So, Jesse, let me ask you just a kind of a personal question about the conversation we're having right now, just you and me. Nobody else can hear this. Are you sensing some friction?
With our conversation?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm feeling this has been a frictionless interview okay. So far in conversation.
Thank you for saying that.
Yes.
So let's talk about the friction. I'm just teasing. I'm a joker. So let's talk about these frictions because you go into great detail, and you talk about macro frictions and micro frictions. And I want folks to think about your own businesses as Jesse explains what these things are: macro friction and micro friction.
So macro friction is at the industry level. So what are the big friction points from an industry level? So, you know, if you can start and think about from going back to the cab industry and how cabs were, and they were very inconvenient, hard to find. They weren't clean. They didn't treat you well. It was, you know, the whole process that Uber and Lyft completely disrupted. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about the legal industry, I think there's a huge opportunity. And I think obviously some people are disrupting and some companies are, but, you know, charging by the minute, charging by like 6-minute email costs mm-hmm. you $400. That's a macro friction. Baseball, a macro friction that we've attacked is that it's long, slow, and boring. Mm-hmm. You get nickel and dimed. And so we made it where it's nonstop entertainment, developed a new game, Banana Ball, a 2-hour timed game where batters can't step out of the batter's box and you can steal first and fans catch a foul ball for an out, all of these crazy rules. And then at our ballpark in Savannah, every ticket's all inclusive, as I mentioned. And so those are macro frictions. You go to a sporting event, nickel and dimed, and a lot of times in baseball, it's long, slow, and boring. So if you attack it at an industry level and really disrupt, you can have rapid growth.
Yes.
That sometimes can be very hard, and it's scary and it's big, but we knew we had to do it because we had no other choice. We were sleeping on an airbed and failing. So I think you can look at that and say, you know what? I wish this industry did this, or what if the industry did this, or mm-hmm. why does it have to be that way? And ask what if. That's a good starting point to look at the macro. The micro, on the other hand, you can attack right away. Micro is, you know, if you want to get into a micro, is anything that is a small point of interaction with your customers.
If you're a customer, like when you became, you disguised yourself and you were a mystery shopper at one of the games?
Yes. So we learned this from Walt Disney as well. You know, he used to go undercover at Disneyland and, you know, go on the rides and walk with the guests. But yeah, every night someone on our staff goes undercover. So I, you know, took off the yellow tux, had a normal outfit, a regular hat, parked with the fans, walked in with the fans, sat with the fans, ate with the fans. And we do it every night and we look for friction points. And I didn't realize it, but where I had to park, you know, there were potholes all over the park. So I literally, my car bottomed out. You know, that was a micro friction point that I experienced. And mm-hmm. then I walked in and I saw our parking penguins, which I can talk about later, but the parking penguins were eating burgers with their back turned torn to me. And that's my first impression. I didn't see that. Those are little friction points that maybe not everyone notices, but it impacts your experience. Your voicemail, does your voicemail say, please listen closely as menu options have changed? You know, you know, little things like that. What is your hold music? How quickly do you respond to people? What is, you know, those are all different friction points. People want to talk to a bank all the time and you have to, please dial 1 for this, dial your account number for this, give your social security number for this.
Those your call is important.
Yes, your call is important to us. No, it's not. I've been waiting for 15 minutes here. All I want to do is speak to someone. So those are friction points. And I think if you look at your policies or little things that you've always done and really never question, you could immediately change those and make them a better experience and start creating fans.
Yeah. So besides being the mystery shopper, you talk about this concept of auditing fan friction. Are there other things that you could do to help find the friction if, as you say, it doesn't come looking for you? Because most of the time, customers aren't going to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at one instance is look at every pay point that you have, because a pay point is a pain point. So look at every single time that people pay for you or interact, you know, they buy from you. So for instance, our invoices, you know, were boring. it was actually a friction point. Anytime you get an invoice, no one gets excited. So we made it fun. And Douglas, you want me to read one of our invoices?
Right. All right. So please.
So this is an invoice you get from us, and we write it different each year, but this is the one that I wrote 2 years ago. Congrats. This is your day. The day you've been waiting for. Today is the day you get to pay. You may think you've had days like this, the day you bought your first house, the day you bought your first car, or maybe your first all-inclusive vacation, but nothing is quite like Banana's payday. So pull out your money order, savings bond, rare coins, Bitcoin, gold, cash, credit card, or check, and make that payment like we know you can. We believe in you. This is your moment. Now seize it. Your life will never be the same. Love, your Bananas.
Love it. Love it. And just so the listener knows, that's not an invoice that Jesse is sending me for interviewing. Okay. This is just, yeah, but I love it. Every little touch point. That was great. That was in the book too, wasn't it?
Yes, I shared the invoice in the book because I think, you know, examples matter. I'm one of the person that like I learned from like when I was in school, I used to learn from like the page before the examples on like math. I'd be like, okay, this is how you do it. So I think the more examples, I mean, I share our voicemail, I share our hold music, you know, I share all those things that we've looked at, the tiniest little details that you think don't matter can actually create a fan.
Yes. And I think at the end of the book, you even had the phone number that said, call this number to listen to our on hold message.
Yeah, our hold music. Because every 2 weeks we have someone call us and say, can you put me on hold? It's the weirdest thing in the world. But they want to hear our ring, 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 banana phone. Because we just want to, you know, stay on brand and make it fun.
Yeah, I didn't call the number because I didn't want to interrupt, you know, the wheels of commerce there from a real customer. Now, the next question, again, it's about friction, but I think it may particularly resonate with like a CEO. And explain what you mean when you write that friction fighting isn't about winning in the short term, it's about investing in the long term. Could that be like somebody who's finding friction saying, oh, I'm not going to bother with that now? Or, you know, it's like, for me, it brought to mind the notion of there's always time and money to fix it the second time.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it comes down to having a lens. And having a lens, if you're always thinking as a fan, and this is how we've learned by going undercover, I get excited when I see potential friction points. Like, I actually get fired up. I'm like, ooh, look what we can do now. And sometimes people might not say they are friction points. But like, for instance, Kurt on our team, he noticed all of our drains at our stadium, and our drains were all rusty. You know, it's almost 100-year stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So he came up to me a week ago, and he shared me. He goes, Jesse, look at these. And I was like, blown away. He got custom-made banana drains that have all of our little bananas. Like, they're tiny little bananas. And only, Douglas, 1% of 1% of 1% of our fans may notice it.
Uh-huh.
But for someone that noticed that friction of, oh, you know, that's a rusty old drain. These people really don't care about the stadium. Now they see, you turn that friction point into a way to create a fan. And I think those little moments, once you have a lens of looking at friction, you see it everywhere. And you see how long a line is. You see how long it takes for someone to get back to you. You see anything, a policy that says, oh, we can't do that. I'm sorry. That's a policy here. And I would really examine, I mean, policies, the word is to police. Do we really need to police our customers because of 1% of 1% that did something wrong? I mean, you go into a convenience store, no shoes, no shirt, no service. How many people in a given day go into a convenience store with no shoes, no shirt? The 1% of 1%. Do you really
need
signage?
Well, the sign's there because of me, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's because of you, but we penalize our fans. And
yes.
I share a story in the book that still eats me at my core of when we did that special Chick-fil-A ticket package with the family, and the family
now that was
came.
That was at your last team in Gastonia?
That was at a former team. Yeah, uh-huh. It was our former team in Gastonia, and the family came in. They were ready to go, and they bought their Chick-fil-A because we had a special ticket deal. They got free Chick-fil-A meals, and I was the person at the door, and I said, "Sorry, no food and drink involved allowed in the stadium." And they looked at me and said, "But this is our Chick-fil-A package." I go, "I'm sorry, it's the stadium policy." And I watched them as they looked out and they couldn't find any seats. So they sat on the parking, sat on the parking lot in 100-degree heat, ate their sandwiches, and they finished and they looked inside the stadium and they decided to get in their car and just leave and not even come in the ballpark. And I remember I called a meeting with our staff and I said, guys, from now on, food and bev is allowed in our stadium. And I got pushback. I got because we're going to lose all our concessions. I go, no, we're going to lose fans by making that.
Uh-huh.
And I go, how many people are really going to take advantage of it? And to this day, you can come into any Savannah's game and bring food or drinks. People don't know that, but we're not going to create friction. We're going to try to create fans and not push back right away.
Oh, I tell you, when I read that story, I died a little bit inside.
Yeah.
It was revelatory. So just to wrap up, at one point you write, with every decision you make, with every practice you reevaluate, ask yourself, what does it look like when customers interact with your business rules, policies, and spaces? Does the fan want this? Does this add value to a fan? And does this make life easier for a fan? Again, it's easy for me to say that. It's really a challenge for organizations to do that. So let's move on to another section, which brought to mind one of my favorite movies, Gladiator. And I even had Russell Crowe stop by and record something for the interview.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Entertain always. Explain what you mean when you write that every business is in the entertainment business. It doesn't matter if you build houses or run a hotel.
You know how much pushback, Doug, I get on this one more than anything.
Like, that is why I asked it, because I could just imagine them saying, well, yellow tuxedo, banana guy, I don't think you understand. You see, we run a fill-in-the-blank business. We're different.
It's so funny. And I've spoken in front of manufacturing companies, realtors, I mean, you name it, that everyone, I mean, yeah, even legal firms, accounting offices, we're not in the entertainment business.
And we're a serious business.
We got to be professional.
Professional.
And I get it. And I get where they're coming from. And I understand. However, I challenge them, because the definition of entertain is to provide enjoyment, to provide amusement. And I believe every company's job is to provide enjoyment. Now, when you think about if you're having people over your house, right? You're inviting people over your house for dinner and drinks and just to have a little gathering. You're entertaining them. You think about when they walk in, you ask, you know, I'll take your jacket. Would you like a drink? You know, you take care of them. You entertain them. And so it's just a definition of entertain. You think of entertain with us. You think of this crazy guy in a yellow tuxedo who dances and screams and yells and throws Dolce and Banana underwear into the crowd. But entertain is really just the idea of paying attention to your customers, your fans, and really hosting them and providing these moments and mapping moments of an experience. And so that's why I talk about the seven stages. That's why I talk about mapping the moments from the first step, because every single company can map the experience to entertain their customers and to create fans by doing that.
Right. And I just want to jump to a latter part in the book. Well, I could just imagine somebody saying something like, well, listen here, Jesse Cole. Maybe they would have a Southern accent and they would pick up on your Massachusetts accent and they'd say, this is great for college league baseball team, but this couldn't work for something more boring like a construction company. But let's talk about Shoreline Construction, what they did. Were they a client of yours, or how did you find out about these guys?
I was giving a speech maybe 4 or 5 years ago to a group of entrepreneurs, and there was one gentleman in the back just taking furious notes. And I was talking about the mapping the moments and the entertaining the client, customer, fan every step of the way. And afterwards, he came up and said, thank you, you've changed our company. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you'll see. And I was like, what? So I found out later, and it was about 6 months later, I got invited to that same group of entrepreneurs, but I wasn't invited to speak. I was invited to listen. And that gentleman, Chris Dalzell, got up and said, I want to share what we've done since we heard Jesse Cole speak about the fans' first experience.
Okay. Now, they're like a new home builder?
They're a home construction company. They're a home builder. They just they're a home builder, you know, high-end homes, and that's what they do. And they were a successful company, but they did a lot of marketing, and, you know, they were successful. But what they did was it changed everything. They got together their team and the spouses, significant others. They had a dinner, and they got these huge post-it boards all over the room that they rented out. And they said, we want to develop the phases of our experience. Phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. And from the first introduction and how they meet the clients to the closing and then even after. And so they started mapping this. They literally, you know, when you first sign, they send a whole video of them all celebrating and introducing your crew. And they send it on an iPad. That's your iPad, plus all these gifts and drinks and snacks. And they find out what your favorite drinks are and coffee. And they send that throughout the process. And then during the electrical walk, they actually do a video and they make it into an experience. And they're sending videos when they're pouring the concrete because they know one of the biggest friction points is people not knowing is their progress being made on their house. So they're showing videos and sending videos to all these people. And then on the closing, they actually pull out, they have a red carpet and they have a ribbon cutting and they have champagne. And the first time they did this, they left the champagne in the back of the truck. So it was warm champagne. So they completely messed up on that, but they make it into a huge celebration. And they started doing this and they started listening and their team started creatively listening to their, you know, clients. And the one story that really hit home with me was the one of the clients, they were having their anniversary and they asked for a recommendation on where they could eat in Bluffton because they were coming into town. Their house was being built. And one of the team members for Chris said, we'll pick you up. They picked them up with the limo. They brought them to their not even framed house, barely framed, the wood side. There was no roof, but they had a private dinner set up and they're soon to be home. And they had literally, they had their favorite meal set up. They were serving them. And the woman started crying on her anniversary and she ended up sharing with everybody on social media. It went viral and Shoreline Construction doesn't have to market anymore. Everyone talks about the experience they deliver because they entertain from the first step all the way to the end.
What I'm hearing are a lot of the three words, you wouldn't believe. I could just imagine her saying, you wouldn't believe what they did and they want to share it. And I think if I remember from the book, I've got some notes here. When they sat down at first, they said, I guess they asked them four questions. What is our client experience now? What do we want it to be? And then how can we be different? I'd say they nailed that. And then What is the wildest thing you can think of?
Yes.
That was absolutely terrific. So you go on to write that normal marketing gets normal results. Entertaining marketing gets remarkable results. And look at Exhibit A, Savannah Bananas. One last question about entertainment. How is entertainment a friction fighter?
Well, if you look at what are the normal parts of an experience that aren't involving entertaining moments, like I said, the voicemails, the hold music, your email signatures, your any type of interaction that you have with your customer, the pay points, if you turn that into an entertaining experience, like I gave an example of the invoice, then that then becomes a friction fighter in itself.
So it's actually one scratches the other's back.
Well, it starts. I think the starting point of all innovation is looking at what are the friction points in your industry. Mm-hmm. And so if you start there and then say, all right, this is the normal experience, what would be the exact opposite? And how can we entertain our fans, our customers? That's how you can really, one leads to the other. So yeah. There was intentionality in this book a little bit, Douglas, to go from eliminate friction into entertain always. There was a method to the madness.
Yeah, but you, good sir, make it all look easy. So
we fail a lot, but people don't notice all the failures because we're trying so many things.
That's right. And actually, you say in the book, people don't remember your failures. They remember your successes. That's important because I think there's such a crippling fear of failure.
Well, how many people are talking about the Amazon Fire phone these days?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a matter of fact, speaking of Amazon, let's go to the experimentation. That was the third thing I want to talk to you about. Great quote from Jeff Bezos. Ever heard of him? He wrote, our success is a direct function of how many experiments we do per year, per month, per week, per day. And then you go on to write, if you want to keep having the same impact on your fans, keep doing the same thing. If you want to keep creating an even greater impact, then it's up to you to keep experimenting. Talk about creating a culture of experimentation, because it's my sense, sort of like the fear of failure, that people don't understand that if you're not experimenting, you're kind of digging a hole.
Yeah, and you know, I learned this from my dad, and my dad's, you know, telling me when I was a kid to swing hard in case you hit it, and
yes, he was never. I love that.
he was, I mean, it was crazy advice, and it was great advice, but you know, we never really talked about all my strikeouts and failures. We talked about the hits. And I think that's just a mindset that we have to get over, that people really don't remember the failures. And so for us, we force ourselves to experiment by, you know, a few years ago, it was one new thing during every game that we never done before, then became two. And now it's 5 to 10. I mean, our minimum amount of experiments we do per night is 5 brand new promotions we've never done before in a live game. And so because of that, we've become numb to things that don't work. When you only try one big thing or take one big swing, it's very hard if you fail to get the courage to do it again. Mm-hmm. But when you build it into your team, you know, we're always asking, what are the new types of emails we can send, the new types of videos that we can create? I mean, even now, we realized that we weren't great at the after effect, the real last impression after they leave the stadium. So now we start experimenting. Emily and I write a thank you letter to our fans specifically after each game. Then we scan it, send it to them. And then 1 week later, this isn't in the book because we just started doing it, another experiment.
Okay, so this is a Marketing Book Podcast extra.
This is an extra. This is a bonus for you. Trying
to over-deliver
value. Yes. I'm trying to. I said, well, what can fans get after the game? They leave the stadium, the band's playing music, we're singing Stand By Me, there's a lot of great moments, then they leave. So we do the thank you note, but then I came up with the idea one morning, I was like, what happens 1 week, 2 weeks? And I thought of the song by Bare Naked Ladies, it's been 1 week since you, that song 1 week. And I was like, oh my goodness, what if we made a custom song every week for our fans? It's been 1 week since you've seen us play, you watch the Banana Baby and Banana, and this whole song geared towards everything that happened during the game. And then we film all the stuff during the game. And then 1 week later, we send them that set video. And so we found one of our guys is a singer. He created the song. Our video team created the video. And every single weekend, they get a new video sent to them of what happened. That's an experiment, but the results have been crazy, as we've been hearing from fans how much they love the video and they respond to it.
Yeah. You know, there was a conversation I had with another author a while back. There's been a few, Jesse. And I can remember we were talking about experimentation. I think it was a book on agile marketing. And we talked about how one thing that a business CEO or somebody who's in charge of marketing, when they're presented with, like, here's our marketing plan, or if it's a Savannah Bananas, it's here's our attention plan, or whatever. But one of the smartest questions somebody in charge can ask is, okay, that's great. I understand it. It all makes sense. It's aligned with our business goals. What are you going to be experimenting on? What experiments do you have planned? That really becomes the straw that stirs the drink. And I would argue that for your organization, people are already going to know, oh, wait, Jesse's, we got to do all those. We got to do those experiments. We better come up with some more things to experiment. And it's, again, back to Jeff Bezos. As you may have written about this, but he is famous for wanting an empty chair in every conference room because that represents the customer. And invariably, he points at it and says, wait a minute, you forgot about her. And then as the people get ready for these meetings with the boss man, they say, oh, you know what? Jeff's going to point at that damn chair. Oh, gosh, I forgot completely about how this affects our customers.
But your customers deserve that. See, yes. I think your customers and fans deserve you and your team to be experimenting, inventing on their behalf. When you look at Kodak, Sears, Sports Authority, Blockbuster, you could go, the business cemetery list is getting wide and long, because they were content with the way they were doing things before, and they weren't willing to potentially cannibalize themselves. Like Blockbuster could have bought Netflix for $50 million. They could have done whatever. But they know that's going to hurt our present business. Mm-hmm. I think the key is when you're always thinking in behalf of your fans and you have that seat for them, and you're always thinking, what can I do to invent that's going to be the next thing for them? That's going to be a little better. That's going to be a little bit more unique. And so that's what we're constantly asking those questions. I think the greatest businesses do that because they will never become irrelevant. Amazon is more relevant now than ever before. They continue to grow because of that culture of experimentation.
Yes. And there's another great quote from Jeff Bezos, and everything I've read about their organization indicates this is very true. He says, we're not competitor obsessed. We are customer obsessed. Mm-hmm. We start with the customer's needs and we work backward. And I found that a lot of companies are very competitor obsessed, but they won't admit it. But you can just tell, you know, monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, and then you're always going to be behind them.
Yeah.
So if you're focused on you will always be a step behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when you're focused on your customers, that's how you get ahead of the game. And again, that's what we're trying to, you kidding me? We invented a new baseball game, banana ball. Like, that is crazy. And people, traditionalists are like, what are you guys doing? We miss the game and we lose traditional fans. But we know that there's never going to be a point that our fans are going to want longer baseball games.
Right.
So based on that, and Bezos has asked that same question. He said, you know, I really don't know what's going to happen in 10 years, but I'll tell you, people will never want something to be less convenient or more expensive or a less of a variety of options.
And yes.
So that's how he said that. That's what I focus on. I focus on what's not going to change. And
yes.
For us, for our fans are never going to want a longer, more boring game. So we are going to create a faster, more exciting game, even if it is going against the way we've done business in the past.
Right. Heresy. Yes. I remember now reading about Bezos where they said, you know, they asked a question. What do you plan? He goes, well, obviously a lot of things are going to change, but we try to focus on things that aren't going to change.
There you go. Yeah.
Like those universal truths. Yeah. Oh, my
brilliant.
Goodness. So let me just ask one quick question, which I think might upset some folks out there, particularly the salespeople. And that is, when you write, a culture of service starts with the language you use. Remember, we talked about language is important, customer versus fan. A culture of service starts with the language you use and the language you don't. Why, Jesse Cole, have you eliminated the word sales from your organization's vocabulary?
The word, it's crazy when people think, you know, we hired Eric Burns as our head coach and a former major leaguer for our banana ball team. And he goes, I want to be the manager. I go, we don't have managers. He goes, but that's what everyone's called when you know, at this level, professional, you're a manager. I go, no, people don't want to be managed. People want to be led. We have zero managers on our staff. And he goes, what do you mean? What about the general manager? I go, he's the president. He goes, you don't have any managers? I go, no. And he goes, okay. I go, language matters to you. I go, yes, it does. And it matters to our fans and it matters to our team. So he's the head coach. We also don't have anybody in sales. We don't have a director of sales. We don't have a director of ticket sales. We have ticket experience. We have a ticket experience coordinator. We have a member coordinator. It's very important, the language we use, because I don't believe anybody in this world wakes up in the morning and wants to be sold. No one wants to be sold, marketed to, or advertised to. People want to buy. People want to feel that they're a part of something. And so we don't sell. We don't have sales in their positions and titles. And it's really, really intentional. And we also don't do any training. They're like, what do you mean? How do you not do training? I go, well, dogs are trained. People are coached. People are taught. People are educated. So we have zero training. We have fans first orientation. And that's where you'll get coached and taught on our beliefs and how we do things.
Let me just ask one last question about the book overall. And that is, explain what a fan first moment is.
It's a moment where it often comes from the great advice I learned from Darren Ross, the CEO of Magic Castle Hotel, where it's the second highest rated hotel in all of Hollywood. And it's an old 1950s apartment building with no spa, no elevator, no amenities like anyone else, but they treat people differently. And he said, we teach our people to listen carefully, respond creatively. That's it. That's how we teach everything. And so how you create fans' first moments is you listen to your people, your teammates, your team members, your staff, and your customers, and say and find out what really matters to them, and you respond in a creative way. So a couple little examples, you know, during COVID, one of our members wrote on Facebook, oh, I would do anything for Oreo cookies and milk. And our ticket experience coordinator went to the grocery store, got Oreo cookies and milk, put them in her mailbox and said, check your mailbox. And thank goodness that she was home, because that milk would have gone bad and that would have been really bad in the middle of the heat. But that's a little moment. Another moment that I didn't even know about was during a game 2 years ago. All of a sudden, in the middle of the game, I saw our announcer, our host, go up to this young woman and her fiance, which I found out, and said, I want to give a big congratulations to Jessica and Alan, who got engaged this morning and are here celebrating. And he gave her flowers. And I was like, how did this happen? And basically what he said was, our team saw during on social media earlier that day that they got engaged and they were coming to the game to celebrate, and then got flowers and then looked throughout 4,000 fans to find them based on the pictures that they saw of them, and then literally stopped the game and made an announcement. Those are fans' first moments.
Oh, man. Talk about, you wouldn't believe. They will never forget that. That's going to be story they'll tell forever.
We hope so.
So, Jesse Cole, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
That's tough.
It's the most unfair question in all of the podcast
world. It's a very unfair question. Yes. A 300-page book that I've put a couple of years into, that's a very tough question. But and I tell everyone, out of the five E's that you mentioned to create raving fans, even if you do one of them, if you start paying attention to one, it can be transformative to your business. But I will start with something that we put on the back of our Fans First playbook from the beginning. And it was a little quote that I said, be patient in what you want for yourself, but be impatient in how much you give to others.
Mm.
If you run your business, run your life with that mentality, and you're patient and you play the long game, but you're impatient in the action steps you take to take care of others, everything else takes care of itself.
Mm. That's great. Well, it's an unfair question, but that was an excellent answer, Mr. Cole. So,
well, thank you.
Well, what's one thing a listener could do today as soon as they finish listening to this to put in action one of the ideas from your book to kind of get them rolling in that direction? Maybe before the book shows up at the mailbox.
I think develop, just talk with your team and say, what are our stages of our experience? That's the first step. It's what Chris Dalzell did with Shoreline Construction. Mm-hmm. It's what we do. What are the stages of your experience? And we developed 7 here with the bananas. The first impression when they interact with us online, the parking lot, the plaza in front of the stadium, the concourse, the grandstand, the field, and then the last impression, that last interaction. If you can just look and develop, what are the phases of your experience? What are the stages? All of a sudden, you become aware that, oh, wow, we're not really... We could do a lot more in this first stage, this first phase, that we can really do something here. And then lean in on one of those phases and get with your team and say, what are some ideas that we could do to create fans and this first impression when they interact with us? Mm. What maybe video could we send? Could we do a unique email that's written, that's fun way, that's different? You know, those little things make a big difference. And so I think you have to first develop what you're looking at and not just say, this is way too big. Zero in on those phases and those stages.
Yes, write it down or put it up on that whiteboard. Yeah. Again, back to Shoreline Construction. The very first question they asked was, what is our client experience now? It could have been 5, yes. 10, 15 things that they realize they have to go through. Or maybe even more. I mean, building a house can be pretty complicated. So, yes. Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or have heard about or that you're looking forward to reading now that you might actually have a little bit of time to read a book now that you've finished writing yours?
Oh, geez. Well, the way I read is I go very deep on subjects. So I got really obsessed with Milton Hershey and how he built Hershey, Pennsylvania, and the school, and not only the Hershey plant. So I just finished the books on Hershey, which I really enjoyed. I just read Dabo's World about Dabo Sweeney and what he's did to build the Clemson empire. So I'm very fascinated on going deep on people that are transformative and really disrupted their industry. So those are the ones I read recently. But you know, again, you could ask me any day. I could be deep into Disney books, which I read constantly, and P.T. Barnum, but those are the ones I've read recently.
Yes, and let me mention something else, that when I interviewed you before, on that episode's website page, which I'm going to link to from this episode's website page, in your book, Find Your Yellow Tux, at the end of every chapter, you had a recommended books because you're a big reader.
Yes.
And
yes.
One day I might even brag that you've actually listened to some episodes of the Marketing Book Podcast. So,
100%.
But what I did, I think there were 66 books. I put all of them on that episode's website page. I'm not going to do that again because you didn't do it in this book. You mentioned other books, but...
Yeah, I did mention. Yeah.
People can find that list, and it is a great list. So at marketingbookpodcast.com, as I just mentioned for this episode, we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books that we've talked about, a link to Jesse's earlier interview, your company site, your Savannah Banana site, your LinkedIn profile, Twitter account, everything linkable to the world of Jesse Cole. We're going to include to make it easier for you to reach out to him. And that's the one thing I really want the listeners to do. Please please reach out in some way to Jesse and congratulate him on this book and thank him for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. This is really the third time I've interviewed you because I interviewed you last week for 12 minutes and now I got you back here and I appreciate you going the extra mile. But seriously, send him a message on LinkedIn or Twitter. Jesse's, I'm guessing here, you're probably somewhat extroverted and you like interacting with people. And I would hope that people will just swarm him with thanks for being on the podcast. Because past guests on the show have told me how much they enjoy hearing from Marketing Book Podcast listeners. And not just because Marketing Book Podcast listeners are really, really, really ridiculously good looking. So, and if you're listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on the episode's website link. The book is Fans First. Change the game, break the rules, and create an unforgettable experience. The author is Jesse Cole. Jesse, thank you very much for joining us again on the Marketing Book Podcast.
You're the best, my friend. Thank you.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. Special thanks to this episode's sponsor, Marketing Architects, creators of the all-inclusive TV advertising concept that's so revolutionary, they wrote a book about it. For a free copy of the book, All-Inclusive TV, How Booming Brands Are Reimagining TV Advertising, visit this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com or visit marketingarchitects.com/book. And tell them you heard about it on the Marketing Book Podcast. And if you're one of the legions of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast stuff. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the late, great Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."